The function of leadership is to produce more leaders, not more followers. Leaders of Men.
And welcome to Leaders of Men. I'm your host, Nick Warner. In a society that yearns for legitimate male role models, I speak to men that are forging the pathway to a healthy, integrated masculinity. Today, I had the pleasure of speaking to men's coach, author, and avid stone fruit eater, Mike Campbell. Mike supports everyday men in building legendary foundations so they can get more from life, love, and the everyday. Mike's skills and passion align in making personal development easy to understand, simple to implement, and motivating to execute, so everyday men can live better lives and build secure and fun relationships. He does this with a lovingly caring heart and a firm, strong hand, a flowing balance between supporting men with compassion and calling them forward to integrity and their potential. One of the things I love about Mike is his ability to translate what can often be felt as too woo-woo or unattainable by many in a way that becomes incredibly easy to digest. I hope you enjoy.
And welcome back to Leaders of Men. Mike Campbell, thanks for joining us, mate. Happy to have you on.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
So let's jump straight into it. What does masculinity mean to you?
What does masculinity mean to me? You know, the first thing that comes to mind is like, oh, this is an interesting topic, isn't it? Right. It's one where I think, you know, there's some fundamental truths. There's a lot of nuance, a lot of individuality. For me, I suppose the aim, first of all, with anything really is to simplify. Right, so how can I simplify that? Because it's one of those things that automatically, like to me, and when I have conversations and then like with the men who I work with who, you know, super confused around the topic, it can be very daunting. Like, okay, well, I didn't even know. So for me, simplifying it down is masculinity fundamentally is, if I speak from my my personal standpoint, it's my expression as a man of the masculine in me. Which potentially opens the question, like, what is the masculine, right? But that's essentially how I simplify it down. It is my male embodied representation and manifestation of the masculine.
I like that you simplified. Okay, now it's one of the things that...
hopefully it sounds simple.
One of the things that stands out for me in the work that you do is that you do make it for every man. And a lot of this work can look daunting to a lot of the guys, and can be a little bit woo-woo and a little bit fucking, you know, the whole thought of meditating and this kind of stuff or self-work, shadow work. But you really seem to have a way to make it available to everyone, which is very, very helpful.
Well, that's my aim, you know, and like, you know, because I suppose first and foremost, because I'm still talking to me. You know, I still need me to be able to understand it, right? And me from 10, 15 years ago. But also that's, you know, really who my audience is by and large is, you know, me from 10, 15 years ago, let's call it. So, you know, normal dudes who they're potentially starting to explore the world beyond what they've currently known. And so I want it to be simple for me to get, and then I'm kind of regurgitating that on some level.
Beautiful. What was the catalyst that got you into men's work?
I think, like, unfortunately, I don't really have, you know, what, this one poignant pinnacle moment. And look, maybe there are little ones along the way. You know, I think the catalyst, in a broad sense, Nick, was, you know, like my own journey and my own life, and my own exploration into myself and what I was doing with my life and where I was. And, you know, I've been working as a personal trainer for about 10 years and I was, you know, traveling the world. I was living in Scotland. I moved over there, I was in about 24 to play rugby. And so I spent a lot of time with myself. You know, I was training and playing football. And so I actually ended up having a lot of time, and instead of kind of filling it, and this was 2006, was it? So, you know, it wasn't smartphones, and of course the internet was around, but like I lived in a small town and have it in my flat, you know, I had to go down the road. So like I actually chose to spend time with myself. And in that, you know, it was a 6-month period where I kind of discovered quite a bit about myself through, you know, like I suppose on some level, conscious inquiry. And I started to explore, like, man, I'm in my head a lot, you know, and I all of these awarenesses and things that made sense to me started to pop up. And that's when I kind of started to explore my own life and behavior and psyche a little bit. And so I suppose that's we could call it one catalyst, but, you know, it wasn't like dive in, you know, it was a few years of stumbling through things and working and traveling and, you know, being in my mid 20s, living in London and all this kind of stuff. But when I then got back to, I moved to Sydney end of 2009, and I had a relationship breakup, an engagement breakup. My mother passed away from cancer. And so that was kind of like another little step where, you know, there was a lot going on for me and I was experiencing a lot. And I was, you know, in a place of like, life's fragile, and you know, like, what am I doing? What do I care about? So there's another period there, really kind of, you know, deep self-exploration as well as growth, and like having to just fucking get on and handle stuff. And then, you know, I met my now wife, who, you know, is friends, and we started dating. There was a lot of inquiry and loving challenge from her, you know, to kind of invite me, I suppose, to a new level of like, who I am, what I'm doing, you know, what I care about, and what I've seen over the years. And that's when I really started to uncover, like, as a personal trainer for 10 years, I worked with men who wanted something physical at their level of awareness or their willingness to admit. And, you know, I knew that there's always something beneath that. And so my skill, somewhat purposefully, but also somewhat unconsciously, I was just, how do I solve this? I know it's a behavior and I know it's an emotional thing. So let's get to that. And that's when I started to connect, like, shit, this is pretty common. You know, physically, these guys aren't where they want to be, but mentally and emotionally, they're not either. And I've been, you know, to lack of a better term, solving that, you know, with them. And that's when I really started to explore, oh, I'm seeing this kind of real discontent, disconnected man who I've been, and I'm working my way through and making sense of. So that was kind of the next step of really diving into, you know, this work, I suppose, now.
If you had a 12-year-old son, what is the most significant thing he needs to know?
Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting. I have a daughter. She's a year, just over a year old. And I have, you know, nieces and nephews. I've got a niece right now who's 12. And, you know, like, it's like, oh, well, yeah, it's different. And I have a nephew who's 10. And you know, where we're living at the moment, we're near them. And so that's kind of where my head goes to him a little bit. You know, it makes it easier certainly for me to put a certain person there. And it's interesting because it's hard for me in that instance not to then see specifically what that kid needs, right? You know, which helps maybe because there's a bit of history there. So I suppose that would probably be part of my answer. Like, it would probably depend on the 12-year-old in front of me a little bit, right? You know, that almost 11-year-old kid, you know, there's some stuff that I feel that he needs, which is, you know, you are such a beautiful and generous and loving and creative and outgoing kid. And my fear is that will be stamped out of you and potentially shamed out of you. And so whilst you might hear and learn and see many things over the coming years, especially when you go to high school, please always remain true to yourself and never let anyone convince you that who you are at your deepest core is not who you need to be. So that might transfer across my own 12-year-old, but you know, that's feels pretty accurate for me.
Yeah, beautiful. I think that's a pretty profound truth that could be shared with every 12-year-old boy, definitely. What's an uncomfortable truth about you?
What's an uncomfortable truth about me? Yeah, I think something that comes to me right now is, you know, one of the things that I've been kind of sitting with, struggling with a little bit over the last kind of 2 to 3 months is the relationship with my father feels like, I felt almost like I'm grieving the relationship a little bit. He's alive. So it's kind of something where I feel like it would be very easy. I'm in the position right now, in the place right now, where it would be very easy for me to lean away from the relationship and, you know, kind of do the bare minimum for him and his granddaughter. But at the same time, you know, I don't want to do that. But, you know, like, to use some relationship dynamic terminology, you know, he's very avoidant and dismissive, and I don't want to be the anxious person continually chasing him, because it's not conducive to a great relationship. So I'm kind of sitting in that place at the moment of like, this is shit, and I don't, you know, really know what the next kind of steps are.
It's a pretty vulnerable truth. I appreciate you sharing.
Happy to share. It's, you know, that's what's true for me. So I could potentially try and think of many other things, but that seems to be the most appropriate right now.
No, I feel that, and it resonates. And I know it resonates with a lot of men, that father wound and the dynamic. And I myself was fortunate enough to be able to rekindle that relationship with my father. And now it's absolutely magical. But I know for a lot of men, the fathers aren't willing to take that step in. So I appreciate you bringing that up. When was the last time you cried in front of someone else?
When was the last time I cried in front of someone else? I mean, I definitely know I cried in front of my wife, I don't know, maybe 2 months ago or so. I feel like there's probably something more recent, but also probably in front of her. I watched, what did we watch? The show, I think it's called It's a Sin. And it's based on a small group of mostly gay men in London in like the 80s. Whew, man, that show will cut you deep. I think that was the most recent. The finale on that one, brace yourselves.
When was the last time you were out of integrity?
Good question. This is something that is very present to me, in the sense that, you know, I'm very aware of my integrity, and it's my highest value, and it's you know, essentially how I guide and direct my life, and also like in my work and my coaching programs, you know, it's something that I invite the other guys to and participate in, checking in with our integrity all the time. So when was I last out of integrity? I think this most recent and obvious, but not necessarily the most profound, was in the last, I suppose, 2 to 3 months. You know, one of my higher values is health and performance is something that resonates more for me. It incorporates health, but it really is about me being able to perform mentally, emotionally, physically, across all boards, across all areas of my life. And, you know, one of the things that really speaks to is movement and physical activity. And so, you know, I came to a commitment of, I have not been moving, you know, I've been prioritizing work, you know, totally different timetable being introduced to our lives with a little one at the moment. And, you know, that side of my health and lifestyle has dropped away. And so, like, without even making a, you know, I'm going to get to the gym this week kind of commitment, you know, I have a baseline foundational commitment, which is to move my body and look after it and nourish it through many avenues, movement being one of them. And, you know, that totally dropped away. So that's been, I suppose, the more obvious and slightly consistent thing. And certainly the one that is, you know, most present, like, you know, I know I didn't do that thing again, you know, I need to get the fuck out and move my body, you know, like, what's my daughter witnessing, how am I, you know, like all that stuff. So that's a again, not necessarily that profound, but actually very real for me. Yeah.
What are you most afraid of?
I think the things that tend to come to me for this are, you know, like, okay, so I've mentioned it a couple of times, you know, I've got a young daughter, and so, you know, that's been such a wonderful and amazing experience and set of challenges and all sorts. And I think something that's been intermittently present has since she's been born has been, you know, this fear around, you know, like her, like, for example, when she was a newborn, I mean, it was just so hard for me. I was so aware of it to even start looking ahead at her being a toddler and then a child and having this long life. Cause what if, you know, something happens, right? Cause of course that's quite natural, but also there's a lot of, you know, the fear of God put into you as the risks for a little one and all this kind of stuff. So that was, I think, quite strong when she was kind of in her first three to 6 months. And I think there's something that's lingering in that, which is like, you know, the fear of not seeing my daughter grow into, you know, an older person than she is right now, into a young girl, an adolescent, and a woman, you know. And there's probably a lot of things that maybe come off that, but that seems to be these days where that's at. You know, that before that there was things like, you know, not kind of, you know, living my life to its fullest and those kind of things, and those things are certainly still real for me. You know, my entire life is not revolving around my daughter right now, but that seems to me the most present when it comes to a fear.
What's your deepest desire?
My deepest desire to love and be loved.
Just like that.
Again, you know, there's potentially lots of little things off that, but that's at the crux of it. That's it.
I think that's deep down. That's what the desire is for a lot of us, isn't it?
Yeah. What is course, it? You know, what that means is you know, being seen and all that. But that's kind of the shortcut that I'm certainly getting to there, yeah. Right? Like actually having people that I care about seeing me fully and, you know, welcome me, right, and feeling like I belong, and also allowing them to feel safe and that they belong with me as an extension.
What is it you are creating?
I mean, good question. This is a question that I reflect on and I think about, you know, like I'm creating lots of little things here and there, but I do also kind of very frequently come back to, you know, here's a piece of content or here's a video or here's a course or a program, right? But what are they creating and what am I creating at a more foundational level is something that I do spend time reflecting on. And, you know, I'll be brutally honest, it's something that I often struggle to like really pinpoint. You know, I my intention is to create ways in which communities, in which offerings and things, solutions in which men can, like in a short sentence, like step into what's available for them and live full, rich, embodied lives. Along the way there's, you know, for them to step out of the shit that's holding them back so they can then kind of step towards that. So that's kind of one step. The next step, what I tend to connect to, Nick, with that is why, you know, why do I want that for men? And I spoke earlier about, you know, like kind of doing, simplifying the work for myself. That's always at the crux of it, right? But that's been the journey. And where the journey kind of takes me to now is, you know, creating avenues, whatever, you know, I don't see my role as creating men, that's not of course it, but creating things that can, that men can utilize so that as individuals, we can show up more powerfully for ourselves and then those around us. And I fundamentally believe that my work and, you know, the work that we do in supporting men is vital for the world, but on a smaller level, like vital for that man's community. You know, when I am my best and when I can show up with maturity and security and integrity, you know, I impact those around me. And obviously, if I can support other men in that, then it's how we then can step into our community. And I think that's something that can impact things on a much larger scale. And, you know, when I can be a place of safety and belonging and welcome for those around me, then that impacts their life. What they do with it is up to them. But, you know, that's something that I see as a responsibility for me. And so that's something that I see as, you know, what I'm intending to create. And anything that I'm doing is kind of that, down that path, down that avenue to supporting men, you know, and stepping into their, I hesitate to say potential, but, you know, what's possible for them and available to them. And into their strength and into their, you know, fully embodied selves and experience. So then, you know, who they can be for those around them.
Cool. What would you love for men to know with every fiber of their being?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that really comes to me is probably a little bit biased on you know, the men that I tend to, you know, speak to or gravitate towards me, but not necessarily. But then there's also like 50 things flying through my head. So you know, I think, Nick, it's... You know, like I, and I'm sure many men have maybe had this conversation or had this question. I get asked the question a lot along the lines of, you know, what does it mean to be a man? And the thing that comes to me for that is, you know, that we could explore lots of things, but ultimately it comes down to being your own man. And so the reason I say that is, being your own man, as I kind of perhaps alluded to that potential 12-year-old, was knowing that whomever you are at your best, including all of the shit that you're still dragging around from your upbringing and your life that you're challenged by, make you who you are. And that's who you need to be and who you will and have the best experience of life and being and the world, you know, really needs and wants from you. So, you know, in a simple line that's almost feels overused, but it is very accurate, like, you know, who you are is enough. And, you know, never be afraid to one, be who you are, but two, ensure that you are actually embracing all of who you are. Right, when we hide the little things in the shadows and, you know, there's self-rejection and judgment, one, those things are normal and understandable, but really, you know, to be, I think, at peace with yourself and effective and loving and, you know, truly strong in the world, it simply asks you to be your own man.
Yeah, it's a very beautiful thing. Like, what comes out of that for me is this thing with self-love. And you can't have self-love without self-acceptance. So everybody talks about self-love, you know, just love yourself and do it. It's like, yeah, but until you fully accept every single part of you, that's not going to work. So, yeah, I love how you said that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's maybe a term, right? Self-love. Okay, cool. I hear about this. what does that mean, you know? Yeah, and really, I think that's often a perhaps an even more effective switch, like just it's self-acceptance. That's what we're talking about, yeah. You know, and maybe like dragging along with that is self-respect, you know. And I think for men, often the masculine connects to that idea of respect a lot easier. We're often living our lives to gain the respect of others, forgetting that it starts with self. And so I think, you know, that acceptance and respect piece is often an easier thing to connect to and grasp. Yeah.
So it's simplifying again, just beautifully. Brother, that's it. If you'd like to just share what you have on offer and where can people find you?
Sure. Yeah. So I've got, you know, Mike Campbell is somewhat of a common name, as many of us have. So I don't tend to have that that part of Google or the internet cornered. But you can find me at my website, mikecampbell.com.au. Instagram is a very simple place to find me. It's where I spend a bit of time, you know, sharing content, Mike Campbell MC. And yeah, I've got a few things, you know, on offer. I have some major coaching programs, but I think probably more relevant here is a mini course that I have called the Better Partner Project, which is very much about supporting men in, you know, definitely men in relationships, but not necessarily, you know. Certainly we have plenty of single guys, and funnily enough, we have a lot of guys who've just got out of relationships, and, you know, there's clearly this motivator to, I don't want that to happen again. You know, and so, you know, we learn about the dynamics of relationships and so on, but more fundamentally, you know, every relationship we have is going to be based on and a reflection of the relationship we have with ourselves. So, you know, the work fundamentally is very much about you, understanding you, being your best, and then bringing that to a partnership.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for joining me, brother.
My pleasure.
And have a wonderful day.